Today, navigating the uncertainty principle. Hello again, it's Martin North from Digital Finance Analytics. One of those posts covering finance and property news. Financial markets are fickle beasts, driven in part by speculators, always looking to make a quick buck when sentiment turns. And many, of course, these days are computer-driven or AI-automated trading, as well as those betting strategically on an outcome which then turns. So there should be no surprise at all to see the price of oil and energy falling sharply on the back of the temporary ceasefire announcement, which of course also triggered rises in stock markets and a fall in bond yields. All very predictable, even if in truth oil remains significantly more expensive and supplies will be limited for months and months, alongside commodities and other critical input goods needed to keep modern economies afloat. Oil prices actually were a little higher today. Goldman Sachs analysts said Brent crude is set to average more than $100 a barrel through 2026 in what they called an adverse scenario, where the Strait of Hormuz remains closed for another month. The situation does remain fluid, analysts said, following the start of a two-week ceasefire between the US and Iran, noting comments from Vice President J.D. Vance that the truce was fragile. We continue to see the risks to our price forecast as skewed to the upside, they said. Goldman's base case outlook is for flows through the Straits to start picking up over the weekend, followed by a gradual one-month recovery in Persian Gulf exports to pre-war levels. Under that scenario, Brent is seen averaging $82 a barrel in the third quarter and $80 in the fourth. Now, it actually seems that the White House will indeed hold direct talks with Iran, and there were no reports of strikes from Arab Gulf nations for much of Wednesday, despite a key Saudi oil pipeline to the Red Sea suffering limited damage from an earlier drone strike on one of its pumping stations. Crude flows continued, though. The East-West pipeline has served as a vital lifeline for getting oil from Saudi Arabia's fields along the Persian Gulf to the Red Sea. Actually, it's more than 1,200 kilometres away, effectively bypassing the largely closed Strait of Hormuz. The kingdom has cranked up flows through the link to full capacity, allowing around 5 million barrels a day to be exported, which is about 70% of total pre-war levels. While Trump said that US military personnel would remain in place around Iran until a ceasefire had firmly been reached, in fact, the Strait of Hormuz remains largely closed as of now. So the truth is, the ceasefire is at best wobbly, especially given the Israeli action in Lebanon and confusion about whether this was in or out of scope in the agreement memorandum. But there are a few key points to note and to reflect on. According to the EIA, we saw a dramatic drop in the average daily oil and liquid fuels produced during March, which, of course, was before the full fallout from the conflict was coming through. Again, it highlights that even if the straits truly open, we are not out of the woods yet. And importantly, on the Hormuz Strait issue, the IRGC has issued an official directive requiring all commercial vessels to use two alternative corridors near Larak Island to avoid sea mines deployed during the war. Inbound traffic north of the island, outbound traffic to the south. All ships must coordinate with the IRGC Navy before entering until further notice. The mines were laid in recent months and are in the main shipping lanes. The alternative routes bypass the minefields, but funnel every vessel through a narrow channel inside Iranian territory, past the same Larak Island, where the IRGC toll booth actually already operates, and the patrol boats already escort ships one at a time. After verifying clearance codes, paid for in yuan or cryptocurrency, it appears that any vessel wishing to pass must contact IRGC-linked intermediaries, and they're required to submit details like their IMO number, which is a unique permanent seven-digit identifier prefixed by IMO, assigned to propelled seagoing merchant ships of 100 gross tonnage and above, used, they say, to enhance maritime safety, security, and to prevent fraud. It remains with the vessel for its entire life, regardless of changes in name, ownership, or even flag state. Plus, they need to provide details of the ownership chain for the vessel, cargo manifests, crew lists, and also the destination. And then the IRGC's provincial command screens it for sanction alignment and assigns a friendliness tier. The toll is calculated as approximately $1 per barrel of oil, paid in yuan through CIPS or actually in stable coins. If approved, the vessel receives a clearance code and route instructions for the Larak corridors. Upon approach, VHF radios hail them. The AIS is verified and a patrol boat escorts them through the minefield-free alternative channel, one ship at a time. The pre-war average was about 138 a day. 400 vessels are reported waiting outside the strait, and 15 to 20 ships completed this process in the first 24 hours. Bearing in mind that the mines will take months to clear, the tolls are going to become normalised, hardly open waters, despite what has been said. Effectively, for now, despite the height, the Strait of Hormuz was really almost as good as closed, and yet markets seem oblivious until they're not. And then we also got the latest minutes from the Federal Reserve, which was big on the fact that they were operating in a highly uncertain environment with risks to both parts of their dual mandate of price stability and maximum employment. While it seems they were at the time somewhat more sensitive to labour market vulnerabilities than to inflation risks, the FOMC, of course, will now have to deal with greater levels of uncertainty related to the inflation outlook, which in turn could well mean higher interest rates, not lower. Consumers, bond traders, and economists all now expect a price jump in the coming year. And even before energy spikes, and before President Donald Trump gets his new chair into place with a mandate for easier money, the Fed was already seeing its inflation fighting credentials called into question. In fact, the Kansas City Fed's Jeff Smith said on Tuesday that inflation risks getting stuck near 3%, and now is not the time to assume that the inflation from higher oil prices will be transitory. And this theme of higher inflation incoming is actually becoming pretty universal, as, for example, the central banks in New Zealand and Thailand commented this week. Actually, Thailand said inflation will definitely accelerate with oil price hikes and supply disruptions, according to the governor. But we will refrain from raising the interest rate as long as possible because higher interest rates will not dampen inflation, which is actually a good point. So perhaps as things emerge, the prospect of higher interest rates are being overdone. But who knows? Which is, I think, the point, really. The outlook is highly uncertain. And I think that anyone who believes they can accurately predict the future trends in the current environment are frankly kidding themselves. We're going to need to watch the data and the political maneuverings. But as I highlighted yesterday, governments will borrow more and throw cash from the helicopters again, COVID style. They have form and no discipline. But whether that's good or bad ultimately for households and businesses is a completely different question. I'm Martin North from Digital Finance Analytics. Many thanks for watching, and I'll see you again next time.